looking for particular numbers.
Okay, and we'll come back to that. Stumpfield? Welcome this afternoon to the General Government Subcommittee of the General Ways and Means, Joint Ways and Means. We'll start off with Senate Bill, a public hearing on Senate Bill 327. We'd like to invite Rick Pepper to come forward. 327, we have been working at public hearings now for, I think this is our third or fourth round, and I feel like we're making some good progress and some good headway, and I'd just like to have, to the extent that he feels like we're making some headway, give the subcommittee an opportunity to hear from Rich Pepper, who represents
Oregon Public Employees Union.
Oregon Public Employees Union. So, Rich, would you like to go ahead and give us an update as the status of the issue relating to the PERS and 327, Senate Bill 327?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Rich Pepper is with the Oregon Public Employees Union, and I wanted to come forward and let you know that our membership has been discussing the issue of this Senate Bill 327, which relates to firefighters in the Forestry Department, wildland firefighters, being entitled to police and fire benefits under the PERS system. The reason this has been a difficult issue for our members to deal with is that there is a legal action also taking place, a lawsuit that was filed with Jesse Backman as a plaintiff. Jesse Backman is a member of OPEU and on our executive committee, on our board of directors, actually, not on our executive committee, I don't believe. His attorney, who is not our staff attorney but somebody else, is on a sabbatical and out of town and out of state and even out of country, and is impossible to reach because he's traveling in Europe. So it's been very difficult for him and others that he's trying to talk with about this issue to determine a course of action, a proper course of action. But they have, Jesse has conveyed to me and during the weekend that he's been discussing the issues with his co-workers and throughout the Forestry Department, and that they view Senate Bill 327 as a reasonable approach to trying to resolve the issues in the lawsuits. They, again, are unable to speak for anybody but Jesse, who is the plaintiff, but he is of the opinion that this bill would resolve most of the issues in the lawsuit for him, and the issue that's not resolved, is, of course, the question of what happens with employees that are not current employees, former employees, in other words, in his opinion. But the prospective benefits, as well as the retroactive buy-in that would be in place for current employees and future employees, would go a long ways to satisfying his needs.
Thank you very much. Now, I believe that we do have a new fiscal, do you have a copy of that fiscal by any chance?
I do not.
Let's get you a copy of the new fiscal information dated June 21st, prepared by Legislative Fiscal Office Representative Dallas Wyand. This now begins to give us a more clear focus. We were considerably different dollar amounts previously, and now we're moving to 2001-2003 on a $200,000 estimated total cost. And wonder if we might just go ahead and have Mr. Wyand explain to us, and for the benefit of, I think Senator Trill probably needs as much up to date on this as we possibly can. Please, Mr. Wyand.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Before you, the fiscal impact for the issue includes the dash A4 and dash A5 the draft amendment to the bill. The dash A4 amendment was the one that had to do with bringing, allowing the public employees bargaining board people to continue to purchase their medical insurance when they were eligible for retirement, no cost to the government. That was a this is a vehicle for that. And
Mr. Chair, I'm glad you accommodated that.
The dash A5 amendment before you was reviewed with Senator Vilsack, who chaired the General Government Committee that heard this first, and we have approval from him on that. He has agreed to this draft amendment. And what this does is it does not make the benefits, the retirement benefits, retroactive. It makes them entirely prospective. However, it does allow employees to purchase prior service credit, and the employees will be responsible for paying the full cost of that prior credit. That is the gist, that is the sum of the dash A5 amendment. The dash A5 amendment does allow that the public employees retirement system can work with these employees and provide for installment purchase so that the employees can time pay, if you will, over time. It wouldn't be, they're not required to pay a lump sum. The only requirement in the dash A5 amendment is that the entire amount of the purchase, whatever prior service credit is being purchased, be paid within 90 days, by 90 days before date of retirement. It also allows the employee to purchase up to 100% of the prior service credit. So if they can't afford all of it or choose not to, they can purchase up to 100%.
Mr. Chair? Yes, Representative
Crawford. A question for Rich. Obviously, there's been an inequity here for a long time, and we all recognize that. What would be the advantage of a firefighter for the Department of Forestry buying into his previous years of service, as opposed to being allowed now to be in the system and go on? Why would he want to spend the money in to do that? What is ultimately the benefit?
Mr. Chair, Representative Krupp, a number of possible benefits could be in place. One is the prospect of higher benefits for more years of credit if when they retire, and if they retire the earlier retirement age, I believe you're familiar with. But there's also being in the system in general. Has the advantage of one of the major things that I understand from Jesse, he and his co-workers are interested in is the increased disability benefit, given the number of the dangers of the job and the likelihood of injury. I think that probably covers it.
Disability was named last, but it was certainly one of the high priorities because of the high risk occupation. And they would become immediately qualified for that benefit as soon as they started to participate and pay. And go ahead,
Mr. Chair. If I could also not responsive to that question, but in general, add on that one of the considerations that is not in our members' discussions about this has been the potential cost of the buyback and whether that becomes out of reach possibly or not, and. I've had a discussion with the chair of the committee about the possibility of a bill coming before the committee that would provide for a deferred tax buyback of those kinds of credits, and that would certainly put our members' minds at ease, somewhat more at ease, that this won't be beyond reach for them.
Well, Mr. Chair, and Rich, you bring up a really, really good point, and I guess I'm not understanding how a buyback of prior service credit would occur in terms of you're buying back so many years of service, which would entitle you to so many dollars of retirement benefit. Is that a one-for-one? I mean, are you paying $1 for buyback for a dollar of benefit?
Mr. Chair, Representative Krupp, know that it's not a one-for-one kind of thing, but depending on what system people would retire under, there may be money metrical formula, but if they have more years of credit, they could be entitled to... they're all in the PERS system, the basic PERS system, but they're being in the police and fire benefit gives you a higher multiplier. As you multiply the years of service, you get a higher factor of with which to multiply those years of service if you go out in the full formula, for instance.
And actuarially, each employee would basically be different, and that can be computed, and we have basically the blessing of the PERS at this particular point that they would go ahead and make those computations available to each of the current 260 employees that are subject to part units and or full units, depending upon where and how often they work on the various types of fires. And this will give them the opportunity to be able to purchase those. Obviously, newer in the program could purchase those as an earlier at a smaller amount and be accruing that benefit over a longer period of time. And it would be advantageous. Those that are within, it's my understanding that we've got down to the point that those who are within 90 days of retirement would probably not even qualify. So that we need to be very cautious about that group, make sure that we get those folks online as soon as we possibly can. And as Mr. Krupper has indicated, there is one other bill that we're working, and we'll be working it on the side, trying to bring it up to speed so that both of these can work together, and we'll use good faith effort to bring both of these bills and get them passed through the joint committee so that they can be to the full committee, and then back before the Senate and the House to get them passed as soon as we possibly can. And I'd like to have the cooperation of all the members of the subcommittee to expedite these issues, because this is a very valuable group of employees who have worked without the benefit of the PNF units in the past, who and then A4 amendments also create a vehicle for the PEBS employees to be able to pick up their own health insurance, no additional cost to the state. It creates a wonderful opportunity for this group of folks to be able to provide for their health care, and that's certainly important to us all. So, Senator Cole.
Yeah, I certainly like what you've done. I think it's a very important bill, and you ought not to lose it. I was wondering if the change away from retroactivity had been something that everybody had agreed to. Was that
The change away from retroactivity was of concern, and that was the very first exposure that we had to the bill was the change of retroactivity. I think the expression of Mr. Backman early on was that he was surprised that the retroactivity was even a portion of it, that he had not contemplated that retroactivity would be a portion of it, and that's the way that the original fiscal was done, and by removing that, it removed the $134,000, and now the retroactivity can be picked up as to those employees who are still employed by anyone. And we had a purchase of service credit example that was given to us by Mr. Steve Delaney in our meeting of the 17th, which shows about a dozen different statutory methods which have been used previously for purchase of these units, and I remember some of those. You bet. You would have some institutional memory in that regard, Senator. And so what we have then is we have some good precedents for doing what we're doing. We just need to move forward just with the final bit of the issues relative to the disposition of how the issue of the lawsuit will be resolved and disposed of, and then Senate Bill 325 will be working at with the permission of the subcommittee. We'll continue to meet.
How does that relate to this?
325 talks about the issue that Mr. Krupper was referring to relative to being able to purchase this with pre-tax dollars, this historic benefit.
Uh-huh.
So giving the employee this additional incentive to be able to do that, and again,
There's a savings there to the employee, but we need to recognize there's a savings to the state in that process too. So this is this we feel like that working both of these bills together then resolves one of the issues that came up early on and can be a benefit both to the 260 participants of this particular unit, can be a benefit to the state, and does not damage. And I might say, and I know it has been a concern, that the agreement is at this particular time that all of the costs relative to making the computations and buying the units and so forth with regard to retroactivity, all the costs would be borne by the employees. It's a concession that would be being made to resolve this issue, and that's the approach that we're taking, and thus far we're on track with that, Senator
Stone.
Senator Lynn was recognized.
Yes, thank you. You mentioned that the state might save. How could the state could save?
Oh, the state saves if relative to the retroactivity portion, if the employee is going to pay, and let's say that an employee's monthly benefit, the relatively new employee, that he's going to buy in and get credits for the police and fire unit, and that his share is going to be $25 a month. Under we hope to fashion that bill $325 so that he could go ahead and have that taken from his compensation as pre-tax. And so that would come out as a benefit. It would reduce his compensation. He would save Social Security tax on it. The state saves Social Security tax match on it as well. And so there's a multiple savings there out of a current payroll
benefit. Okay, I have one question. And it's a $200,000 fiscal impact, 1990. How much are they? Is that the 2001, 2, 3? Mm-hmm. How did you calculate that? Because when they go to the money match, and plus the state has to pay 8%, and then how did you figure that the amount could be flexible enough?
Mr. Chairman, this number was developed by the actuary of the Public Employees Retirement System, who was given the information of the 260 individuals because they fight fires part-time. The time that it equates to about 73 full-time equivalents, and the Public Employees Retirement System actuary, using that information and the average salary and life expectancy and stuff, did the computation that prospectively it would cost about $200,000 a year.
Okay.
And this would be an adjustment to the employer's rate, and because they adjust the rate only every biennium, the 1999-01 rate has already been established, so it would not be adjusted until the 01-03.
Okay.
So this is per the Public Employees Retirement System's actuary best estimate, and he did use actuarial tables and information provided by the Department of Forestry.
476 positions, FTE 73, and if they want to buy back, then how much average will it cost them to get into that area? It's going to be a lot of money to pay that. It really depends upon the time they serve,
mm-hmm.
what the average is going to cost them quite a bit.
The actuary could not give any numbers. It would depend on each case separately. The Department of Forestry is tasked with the responsibility of giving the actuary all the past payroll data and the like that the actuary would have to use, but the actuary could not give it I can't put that in perspective, I'm sorry. Originally, the bill that was retroactive, the biennial fiscal cost was about $334,000, so the savings from the employer contribution by not having it retroactive is about $134,000 a biennium. Now, that doesn't mean that that's what it would cost for the individual to buy that. But that would, because of the retroactivity, that would have been the additional cost to employers.
Okay. One more question, I don't know if it's
a follow-up for us.
This might be a political question. The firefighters got in all under this case.
sufficient benefit in those things. And then you think that if someone working at the lab, you know, they are some cancer risk, and they might be categorized, you know, they need additional benefit. And plus any other group working in a factory, they're exposed to some kind of a chemical, you know, we have a problem, we need to. Are you not opening up the floodgates? Everyone eventually getting in there more higher, paying their purse, which they like to do?
That's an excellent question, and the bill is very, very specific, and the law, is current statute, is very, very specific relative to who is an employee and what is creditable service under the bill. If you have 327A in gross right now, you'll see that probably beginning at the bottom of page 2 and the top of page 3, well, let's see, it goes into what the terms, what some of the terms are. Let's see, middle of page 3 talks about what a police officer is. And that's very specific. And of course, what happens is then it goes on and continues on after we get through clear down to T on page 4. That's on line 30. Employees of the Oregon Youth Authority are classified as juvenile parole and probation officers. Those are the police units. And then it goes on paragraph 15 to now identify statutorily. Statutorily, and that's what's being done here is we're changing the statute to add under that process an employee of the Department of the State Department of Forestry who is certified by the state forester as a professional wildland firefighter whose primary duties include and abate uncontrolled fires as described under the Oregon Revised Statutes. And so I hope we're not opening it up for people legislative fiscal officers who are prone to be working at their desk with their pencil in hand and then fall asleep and hurt themselves with a pencil or something like that. Legislative officer from Washington, Ryan, would be prone to anything, but we accountants know how each other works, and so... But no, it doesn't open it up.
The job's almost as dangerous as legislative.
Are there any other questions? I think we're moving along. We've scheduled now for we're at the point where we're a public hearing and possible work session. We're very close to a work session, but we need to continue to work 325 and now have the two of them catch up and move together forward. And we're under a 24-hour rule, so. The soonest that we could actually work 325 would be Wednesday at this point, and we really should work as I will say this, I was deja vu, but I think that we are working in good faith, that we are working with due diligence here now to try and resolve the issues, and I think we are very close to resolution. I feel very positive in my meetings even privately with Mr. Delaney and legislative fiscal office representative Mr. Wyan, that they feel like this is the correct and proper direction. Again, we want to be fair with this group of employees who have I think we have ample testimony to indicate that they should be included. So, we'll now hear from Mr. Wyan. Do you have further comments?
Just one more, Mr. Chairman, to this meeting. As you can see, the fiscal impact of $200,000, we tried to split the cost between that portion which would be general fund and that portion which would be other funds. I also wanted to comment on if we hear Senate Bill 325 on Wednesday, we'd ask that an amendment be drafted that would make it applicable to the whole cost purchase. That is only for those employees who are responsible for paying the full cost of prior service credits. There's a whole shopping laundry list of prior credits and a new number of ways of paying for them, prior service credits. And we've discussed this, that the restaurant the purchase of prior service credits, this subcommittee didn't want to put an additional burden on the public, on the taxpayers for that, but wanted to allow the employees the opportunity to buy that. The Senate Bill 325 allows payments over time, Most of the statutes require lump sum, either at a given date or just before retirement. The amendment you have before you on Table 327 allows those installments, but the 325 does allow installments, and the pre-tax nature of it would have to be approved by the Internal Revenue Service. So that's one caveat. It's not a guarantee, but at least it is in the bill, and it's subject to approval of the Internal Revenue Service. We have Senator Duncan, he chaired the Senate Government Subcommittee from which both 325 and 327 came from, is in agreement with the concept that we will get approval from him on the amendment that we are having drafted now for 325, which would make it applicable only to employees who are picking up the full cost of the prior service credit. So that is the process that we get approval of any substantive changes from the substantive committee chairs, and we do have that agreement. And Senator Duncan is up to has been brought up to date with it, all of this, and is comfortable with it.
Okay,
yeah. One more final question.
Yes,
why is the attorney fund the $70,000 for the union? I thought it's the one first and other fund.
These are the employer's contributions, sir.
Okay.
Yes, and so I just estimated that employers about, I use 35% roughly of the employees in state government are funded the general fund. And so that's how the allocation. It might be a little different, but because the Public Employees Retirement System assessment of state employees is a blended rate, all employers in state government, this only applies to state government, it has no local and county effect. All employers in state government pay a uniform rate, and this adjustment then is spread amongst all employers in state government over the biennium. So I just tried to allocate between those employees that were more general fund than those that were other fund than federal fund.
Okay.
So these costs are also spread, those systems, spread among local governments, and you didn't assess the cost for them.
These costs are not spread to local governments because this is a state
There
is no cost to local governments.
This is effective at the beginning of 2001 then.
Yes, the assessment would be, the adjustment to the employer's rate would be effective in 2008.
But the coverage would begin with the passage of the Act.
Yes, sir.
It takes a time to react with regard to the actual assessment, and this is the lowest assessment. This is 0.01% is what it is the lowest assessment. And that's that will be adjusted with the total amount of PERS statewide. But we need to recognize that right now, in addition to the people that are listed in the Act, participating in the fire units, which is just in the fire marshal at this particular point, and the police units and so forth, those are spread throughout government by the PERS. Those are charged on the secretaries in the building the same as they are charged to the actual police and fire. In other words, because it is an integral part of the service of government to provide the service to provide the forest fire fire workers for the Department of Forestry, then they don't bear an overly large portion of the cost. They just bear their proportionate cost, because it's just like the police, it's an integral part of what we do in government. Okay. Are there any other questions? And I think Mr. Pepper had one more comment.
Two quick things. One, I wanted to thank especially the chair, but also the committee for the patience in dealing with this bill. It's been taking a little bit of time, and it looks like it might take a little more. But and the other thing, just Jesse back when we're here, he'd want me to clarify for the record just the comment about him being surprised that the retroactivity piece was in there is accurate. He was, but it related to the political viability question, not, of course, whether it was a fair issue or fairness issue or not. But, and he would also like to express his gratitude, I'm sure, for working so hard on it.
Thank you very much. And we appreciated him taking his time away from work, and he was on his own time as he came up and represented the other forest firefighters of the state. So we do appreciate that. And he's back at work now. So and we'll continue to work that. And what we'll do at this point, maybe we can go ahead and move 327 why don't we reschedule 327 on 325 together for Wednesday at this particular point, and we won't, we'll just go ahead and close this portion of the hearing and then bring both of them back on Wednesday, depending upon how far we've come. And with the blessing of the co-chairs as well. We need that. If that's satisfactory, then we'll go ahead and close this portion then of the Senate Bill 327. Thank you very much. Senate Bill 774, relating to green permits. I would like to invite Mr. Ken Rocco from the Legislative Assistant Office forward. And let's see, do we have any further testimony? Okay, relative to public testimony, but first of all, Mr. Rocco, can you bring us up to date, please, on 774 so we all start out at the same spot, please?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 774 was passed by the Senate 26-3. It was referred to the House Committee on Water and Environment. It received a 9-0 vote there and was referred to Ways and Means due to the fiscal impact associated with the bill. This program was established in 1997 by the legislature as a pilot in House Bill 3457. The bill before you simply extends the sunset date of the program to December 31st, 2003. Basically, the program establishes a partnership between the Department of Environmental Quality and businesses to allow the department regulatory flexibility in approving certain environmental permits and regulations. In 1997, the legislature provided $70,000 of general fund and authorized a half of an FTE position to establish the rules for this program, and those rules are now nearly completed. The fiscal impact that I passed out to you on the second sheet of the handout indicates that there's an estimate of $112,333 for 1999-01. And you'll note this is all other funds because this program is paid for by the businesses that are participating in the program itself. This impact on the agency's budget can be dealt with in their budget, so there's no need to change the bill at this time if the committee wishes to send it for it through the full way to me.
Thank you very much. Are there questions of Mr. Rocco as we begin?
And all the bill does is extend the program, the pilot program is extended 2 more years to go.
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
As you found it, 2 or 3. It goes from 000 to 03.
Okay. So that's correct. It goes to the end of 2003.
For 3 years.
Yeah. Okay. We have for public testimony. Thank you, Senator Cho, for that explanation and clarification. We have for testimony today, Catherine Van Ayer from Northwest Pulp and Paper. Mr. Ledger's here too. I guess you could be a happy duo. Looks like you both signed up on the same side of the issue here. You are still speaking to each other, then.
Oh, yeah. And we promise not to run off
with
the
pig day. Sure. Oh, please,
Senator. We've got a quorum, but I'm going to have to leave very quickly, and I'd like to be able to vote for this.
Okay. So, as Senator Hannon said earlier today, you can talk for a long time, beat it to death, and not get anything done. You can be very short and look through the past.
Well, I'm done. Catherine Bonetta, Northwest Pulp and Paper. AOI, Northwest Pulp and Paper, and Weyerhaeuser introduced this bill in 97, and we've been working on it ever since. We've sat on the rule advisory committees, and at the time we established it, we wanted it to be a long-term program. It was cut down to a pilot study. This extends it 3 more years. As we said, the rulemaking is just about done. We'd ask for your support.
Any other questions? We'll go ahead and close the public hearing portion and open the work session relative to Senate Bill 774.
I move we send the bill to the full Ways and Means for the due pass recommendation.
Senator Cho recommends full Ways and Means with two-path recommendations. Is there any objections to that recommendation and that motion? There being none, noted. So ordered, and we'll have Senator Cho go ahead and carry it for the full Ways and Means, if you would please, sir. And would you like to carry it to the Senate, or do we have
the other two senators?
Just to share, if I may, the bill's already been to the Senate.
Oh,
it's in the House carrier.
It's in the House carrier.
I was headed to the Senate.
Yeah, there we go.
Now I volunteer. Now I volunteer. Any preference? Representative Messerly will carry to the House. Thank you very kindly. We'll appreciate it. We'll go ahead and close then the work session and all of the session relative to 774. Thank you very much. And House Joint Resolution 28. Now let's see. We have someone. Thank you very much, Mr. Leggett. We have someone that is to be here at 2 o'clock relative to House Joint Resolution 28. Dallas, who was it that was coming?
Larry Harvey.
Why don't we go ahead and have you give us an update on the issue of that, please?
Mr. Chairman, of this meeting, House Joint Resolution 28 proposes an amendment to the Constitution to allow formation of counties with areas less than 400 square miles if the area has more than 100,000 inhabitants. It places the measure on the earliest next special election or primary election. This bill has already been through the House. It passed out of the House A and Gross, referred to the Senate Committee on Rules and Elections. It was passed out of Rules and Elections with a due pass recommendation and was subsequently referred to Ways and Means. As you can see, the staff measure summary you have before you described the bill that came out of the House. There have been no changes. The fiscal impact that you have before you is the impact of a special election. That's the entire cost of a special election. The one subject type of special election. There is House Bill 2354 making its way through the process, which we call for a special election in November. As drafted, this would be part of that special election. If that one doesn't go through, it would be primary election. The fifth reason is just for the cost of a special election.
Three amendments.
Mr. Chairman, there's a question about that. The bill is amended with the A. Gross version would amend existing Constitution. Yeah, and which allows a county with 400 square miles, but it must have at least 1,200 inhabitants, and this would allow a new county with less than 400 square miles that has to be 100,000 inhabitants.
It doesn't say anything about what's left in the
other. It's an exchange, and after this, assuming this is approved by the people, then they have to vote on the forming their own county there after this.
That would
be true. Okay.
If it would allow them,
then there will be another election to form their own county. Okay, well.
Yeah, the Constitution, I believe, provides a two-fifths majority, or a three-fifths majority of each county that's affected. As I recall, what is it you represent?
Well, this one changes that.
This actually changes the.
It makes it a simple majority.
Simple majority of the living in that county who wants to form their own county.
Yeah. Yeah. Doesn't require a vote by the people of the county that is being divested of the territory?
No. This will give authority to the people in the county wants to form, and as long as they want, it's up to them to decide and not affecting the other county. So if they want to expand the their boundary, then Fort County has to vote on it.
That's what I'm upset about. It's when they expand the boundaries of the county.
Because it affects all the counties. That's why they have to agree.
That's right. That's what I've got that messed up with.
Thank you. I think when one group withdraws within a county, it affects the other counties. So I think everybody should.
That's true.
But that's just my box.
Okay, did we have anyone else sign up for House Rent Resolution 28? We'll go ahead.
I'm sorry, I did not sign up. I was hoping Larry Harvey would be here in time and I wouldn't have to say a thing to you. Good afternoon, Representative Butler and members of the committee. My name is Judith Ewer. I'm with the City of Gresham, and I can maybe answer a couple of questions that have come up. House Rent Resolution 28 refers to voters the question of whether a county could be formed of less than 400 square miles. Given some certain population constraints, and that would be if there were 100,000 people within the new county and if an equal number or greater were left behind in the existing county. There's a companion measure, House Bill 2757, that addresses the voting requirements, so we don't see that within that. HDR 28, that has already passed off the Senate floor and through the House as well. I'm not sure, I apologize for being procedurally ignorant here, I'm not sure if you have the proposed amendments.
We do have the dash A1, A3 regular, amendment, which indicates it will be at the next regular, we will insert at the next regular general election held throughout the state, and delete the rest of that portion of it that comes from line 15. So it's to reduce the fiscal cost.
Yes, it will be at the next regular general election.
In 2 years.
November 2000. Where is that feeling coming from?
Sincerely County is where it is. As far as I know,
that's been my kind of
Gresham. Let's see. Well, let me just. Here's a letter from the mayor and city council, the Gresham City Council. It states as follows, dear Representative Lewis, directed Representative Lester Lewis, I wish to clarify House Rent Resolution 28, which allows a new county to be formed in an area of less than 400 square miles, requires no specific timetable for being placed before the voters. Although our primary estimate was that a vote would take place in November 2000, the referral does not require special attention and may be placed on the next regular scheduled general election ballot. It's assigned City Councilor John Lefhauser.
Okay.
Gresham certainly must be included in that process. Representative Hanson, Gresham.
Well, I supported this on the floor, which is a little strange, because it. I also think it'd be very reasonable to move it to the general election because what sparked this whole debate was city-county consolidation between Multnomah County and the city of Portland in that discussion. All things being equal, I think the whole works probably isn't needed because city-county consolidation, for all practical purposes at this point in time, is dead. So it doesn't really make a lot of difference whether it be in a special election or a general election. That whole subject tends to renew itself about every 10 or 20 years, and it might be good to have something, be something now so that 10 or 20 years from now when it comes back up. I would be adamantly opposed to the new language that's being put in it. I voted... however, a new county may be established with or within an existing county. The amendments that are by the Committee on General Government, April 29th, were those passed? Okay.
Those were in the, when we voted on the House on May 14th, those were in the...
Okay. They changed. Okay. I was afraid those were being proposed today. There's a moderate change there. So all we're talking about is the date of the election.
The date of the election.
So the
from the A and goes to the dash A three amendment.
It makes a lot of sense to take amendment.
Sure.
That's what Senator Crowe.
I think that I object about it. One is I hate to see putting things like this in the Constitution, although it clearly, I suppose, is a, you know, probably would fit there okay, and does talk about how you make some changes in county boundaries, but I hate to see us find a fix for Multnomah County problem, Gresham, and stick it in the Constitution, apply it to all of the counties in the state, and set up a situation where you could have secessionist movements that really made no sense for the rest of the county. Lots of things bugs me. So that's why I voted against it. Gresham and Multnomah County has problems. I wish I could work it out about defending the Constitution.
Senator Crowe.
I was just thinking about how that Senator Crowe is going to be when we rename the Sandy River the Snake. Senator General is going to be a lot better.
We're going to take all the dams away, sir.
That would do it. You won't have heard about any dams. You have to raise your rate. So
the dams will all be down at that point on the Snake.
It's just that, Mr. Chairman, I also have a meeting scheduled for 2 o'clock, and that would be, I wonder if it would be a pleasant surprise for Representative Sinferi to come here and find out that his bill's moved.
I don't know that Representative Sinferi was going to come and speak forward on it. I think Mr. Harvey was anticipating being here. And Judith, how do you say your last name, please?
U-R-E.
Judith Ure is here to speak on behalf of Mr. Harvey and his organization.
Is the bill here because of its fiscal impact?
Yes, it has the issue relative, originally it was scheduled at $1.205 million. Why don't we go ahead and go into work session relative to this, and then we'll have the recommendation from Legislative Fiscal. So we'll close the public hearing portion on House Senate Resolution 28 and open the work session on House Joint Resolution 28, and we have a fiscal issue and then the dash A3 amendment.
Mr. Chairman, before you have fiscal impact that addresses funding a special election, the dash A3 amendment before you would put this resolution before the voters in the next general election, which would be November 2000, the cost of something you put on the ballot for the general election is about $45,000, and generally accommodated within the Secretary of State's budget. So, yes, the fiscal would be relatively small with this amendment.
Are the revenues estimated to remain the same?
There would be a small amount of revenue. That's based on the current $300 for filing of the project, so there might be some small amount of revenues.
Are we in more questions?
Yes, sir.
I move the amendment.
It's been moved by Senator Crowe. We approved dash A3 amendment, and we do have substantive authority from Senator Duncan, I believe, from that committee, and you can certainly be on that committee. Any opposition to moving the A3 amendment? If not, we will go ahead and incorporate the A3 amendment.
Somebody else move the bill.
I'll move the HR 20 amendment here to the Ways and Means
of the DPAS recommendation. Senator Ferriola moves with a full DPAS to the full Ways and Means. Okay, and Senator Crowe is a no. Are there any other no votes relative to this particular issue?
I don't know.
Representative Leonard and Senator Crowe. Are there any others? If not, why don't we take for the record a full roll call at that point?
Mezzo?
Aye.
Leonard?
No.
Hansen?
Aye.
Cup?
Aye.
Stroh?
No.
Lynn?
Aye.
Ferriola?
Aye.
Butler?
Aye. will pass House Senate Resolution 28, the four ways and means, the due pass recommendation.
Senator Crayola, would you like to carry that to the full ways and means, sir?
I will.
Okay.
Now, can you submit to the floor again?
Not to House Senate.
I accept the Senate.
Senator Lenz of the Senate floor, and we will go ahead and full comment. Thank you very much. I think that to get wrapped up all the items of business which we have on our agenda today. Thank you for your participation. Get fast and serious for here.